Speaking of fallen, welcome to the show, everybody. Comes naturally, we are.
Joe.
Mike.
I am Cody. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hey.
I'm waving because people can see me.
I'm waving audibly.
That's a hello. That's saying hi.
Yeah.
No, I said I'm waving audibly, as in like I'm describing what I'm doing.
I'm waving audibly. I don't know if that's how that works. Hello. What's going on, fellas?
I can thankfully say that it sounds like that Dundee movie is not actually real.
No one cares about your opinion.
It looked fucking awful if it was going to be a fucking movie, and now it looks like all it is just an ad for Australian tourism.
You know, it was not an ad for Australian tourism.
Paul Hogan.
I'm pretty sure he was a pretty good ad for Australian tourism. I know after seeing Crocodile Dundee, I wanted to go to Australia.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I didn't.
Not like the deep, deep part of Australia, but...
I still don't.
Australia. Why would you want to go to Australia?
Why?
I mean, like, yes, there's a million reasons. Yeah, exactly, and that's one of them.
Poisonous everything.
Snakes.
Yeah.
Spiders that panda bears snakes, that eat your face.
Snakes that eat spiders.
Pandas that eat all those things. And people.
The weird architecture.
That part doesn't bother me too much.
No, that thing looks like a weird monster.
Weird monster.
what's this podcast about today, Cody?
I don't know.
You want to just go into detail about how cool Pacific Rim was?
The trailer?
No, the first movie.
I think I might have already done that.
What?
Yeah.
You mean to tell me that's already on the feed? That's weird.
Yep, as of 5 a.m. this morning.
Way to ruin our plan today, you dick.
Way to try to capitalize on my plan that I had, you know, last month.
13 nominations for The Shape of Water. That's fucking weird, right?
Oscar
weird,
nominations, right? No less.
Yeah.
Like the big ones.
Because that's 13 is just Oscars. There's so many other ones.
Yeah.
Like in wins, too.
Yeah.
I was going to pull up the list real quick once I find it in this fucking news feed that's long as balls. There it is.
Ball long. Long as left balls.
Is that a saying that I don't know about? It's now. It's a
personal thing.
It's a personal thing.
It's a personal thing. One does always hang lower than the other.
Welcome
to If you're lucky to have two.
Yeah, Lance Armstrong.
Yeah, Lance Armstrong.
You cheating one nut fuck.
Yeah. He had to use drugs because he didn't have as much testosterone as everyone else because he only had one testicle.
Okay.
Wasn't that the actual explanation?
Yep. Yeah. That was the actual explanation.
Yeah. And it does make sense.
Also, the other explanation that he gave later on, which was everyone was cheating, so I had to compete.
Which also makes sense.
Yep. Might as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Juice him up. All these make the bikes heavier, then it counterbalances, right?
Right.
Yeah, see?
Oh, okay.
Pretty sure that's how it works.
I'm not going to put thought into that, so whatever.
Yeah, see? I was correct. Majority rules. Anyways, nominations for the 90th Academy Awards. You want to run through them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Best Picture. We have Call Me By My Name. By Your Name, sorry. Call Me By Your Name.
Cody?
Still, that title makes me confused.
Joe.
Yes. If you're going to call me, you have to call me by your name.
Yeah, Joe.
Yep.
Okay.
Welcome to the show. It's coming out to we are...
Cody?
I don't like
Mike's like, I'm confused.
And I'm not doing it.
Mike's like, who am I calling again? We have Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, The Post, and The Shape of Water, as well as three billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri, which is the bizarrest name.
Yeah, I was going to say three billboards were nominated.
No. Yeah.
Just the three that are outside Ebbing, Missouri
yep.
are nominated.
Just those three. That one, and way over there.
Yeah.
What do you got, Mike? What do you think?
Give me one more time.
Call Me By Your Name, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, The Post, The Shape of Water, three billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri. Now, I know which one you want to win.
Do you?
Get Out.
Get Out. Yeah, I was going to say.
But which one do you think is going to win?
Smart money would be on the Post or Phantom Thread, I would think. I mean, I feel like those are probably the two.
I don't even know what those movies are.
The Post is the one with Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep.
Steven Spielberg. Oh, yeah, that's right.
About the Washington Post.
I don't think that one would win.
It's getting really good reviews.
I'm sure it's getting really good
reviews. They're all getting really good reviews.
Yeah, exactly.
But people, like, I don't know. People are talking about, like, this Academy Awards being, like, the most stacked in a long time. Mm-hmm. Like some of the best movies in a long time.
Yeah, because I went through the list and I was looking at it. I was like, I don't want to make this decision at all.
Yeah, it's going to be a rough one.
Like, if it was down to me, like, yo, can we all just talk about it? Yeah. I don't want to make a single vote. I don't want to, like, I want you guys to convince me. That's what I want. I don't want you guys to make me think.
First year awarded to everybody.
Everybody wins.
Everybody wins.
Everybody wins. You win an Academy Award.
Oprah hosting?
Look on your seats, everyone.
Everybody gets an Oscar!
Except for Wrinkle in Time. It's not even nominated. Mainly because it hasn't come out yet. So, you think The Post?
Or Phantom
Thread. Or Phantom Thread.
I would...
What's Phantom?
That's the one with...
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah, Daniel Lewis.
Supposedly his last...
Yeah, we heard that once before.
Right.
But I'm spacing on the director's name, but that dude tends to direct...
Paul Thomas Anderson?
Yeah, he... like, it just... Everything lines up for that movie. I mean, it's a Daniel Day-Lewis movie. It's Paul Thomas Anderson. It was like, those guys make Oscar movies, so...
Yeah, for sure.
I haven't seen it. I'm just strictly going off of their reputation. It just kind of seems like a thing that's... That's one of those movies is like if you heard about it before you saw anything, you're like, it's gonna get nominated for some Oscars
on paper.
But yeah, I would probably lean towards Post though, The Post. So I'm probably wrong. It's probably gonna be one of the three movies that I haven't seen or don't know anything about.
Well,
but
that's quite a few movies for me on that list.
I'm trying to see all of them this year, though. I want to see all, because like the nominations are all getting really good reviews. Yeah. So I'm going to track them all down, and I'm going to watch them all between now and the Oscars to see, and then I'll give you a for sure pick.
A for sure, for sure.
Guaranteed. Pick. Guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
When are the Oscars?
March 4th? Hold on. Yep, March 4th. Be held on March 4th. Got plenty of time.
Who do you think?
I haven't seen either of those two either. So the only ones I've seen is Dunkirk, Get Out, and The Shape of Water. This one's again, like I said, it's a tough one. The one I would want to win would either be Get Out or The Shape of Water.
You know how huge it would be for one of those two movies to win?
Over those other ones,
and just in terms of giving creative people a chance to make their shit unfucked with.
Recognized
with, you know what I mean? Because those are two... I mean, Guillermo del Toro is obviously a huge name, but that's a pretty small movie that he had complete control over. And then obviously Get Out was never supposed to be as big as it was.
Yeah, not at all.
And if they can, one of those two movies gets it, it's like, that's creative people making creative movies. And I think it'll see even more of a spike in studios just letting people make their shit without trying to get too involved, which I think would be a good thing for films going further. So hopefully it's one of those two, but.
But I have a feeling from what I've heard. When I've read, Phantom Thread is probably going to be the leader on that one.
Mm.
Apparently, it's a really supposed to be an amazing movie. But I mean, who knows at this point? What do you think, Joe?
Get Out.
Okay. All right.
And it's mostly because of what Mike said. I mean, you pretty much took the words right out of my mouth.
I do that sometimes.
Yeah, you do.
Achievement in directing, which apparently is what they call best director now.
Best director now.
It's achievement in directing.
That's weird.
I don't know why it's not
necessarily the best director.
Nope, achievement in directing.
I'm going to go ahead and just say it's going to be Jordan Peele.
You have Dunkirk Christopher Nolan for Dunkirk. You have Jordan Peele for Get Out. You have Greta Gerwig for Lady Bird. You have Paul Thomas Anderson for Phantom Thread, and you have Guillermo del Toro for The Shape of Water.
I think it's Paul Thomas Anderson.
I'm going. Well, does it usually go like best director?
A lot of times, yes.
Yeah, best director, best movie. Picture.
Yeah,
yeah. A lot of times, yeah. But yeah, Paul Thomas Anderson for that was weird because Steven Spielberg didn't get best director or achievement in directing.
But they did that to Affleck.
Yeah,
a couple times, dude. His shit got nominated for best movie, but he didn't get nominated for. I feel like it should just be a
copy.
Yeah,
yeah.
Whoever was nominated for the best movies, those directors should get nominated for best.
I mean, they essentially are, except for Steven Spielberg.
Why wouldn't they just?
The Coen brothers. There's quite a
few that's not. Yeah, that's on the best picture list, but not on the directing.
Yeah, Call Me By Your Name isn't on there either.
Which is weird.
Yeah. Whatever. Maybe there's a certain number that they list that to.
And they just best picture 40. More
options.
I can see that, but it seems weird going the opposite direction.
It is very strange.
Anyway.
Performance by an actor in the leading role. Not best actor. Best performance.
Had the nominations always been like this, and we just abbreviated them up?
No, I have a different list than you. That's weird. Because mine does the best picture, directing,
original
screenplay.
This is on Coming Soons, but this is taken directly from the Academy Awards page when they did their live stream of the nominations. So this is taken right from them, so that's what they call
it. So this is actor in a leading role.
Yeah, so this is performance by an actor in a leading role. You have Timothy... Chalamet, I think is what it's pronounced, I think.
Chalamet,
yeah, for Call Me By Your Name. Daniel Day-Lewis for Phantom Thread. Daniel, I have no idea how to say his last name.
Kaluuya,
is that how it is?
I would say so.
Okay, for Get Out. Gary Oldman for Darkest Hour, and Denzel Washington for Roman J. Israel Esquire.
Mike?
One more time.
You have Timothy... Chalamet for Call Me By Your Name. You have Daniel Day-Lewis for Phantom Thread. Daniel Kaluuya, is that what we're saying it's going to be? Sure. Kaluuya, whatever, for Get Out. It's the obviously lead actor in Get Out. Gary Oldman for Darkest Hour, and Denzel Washington for Roman J. Israel Esquire. Are you using a calculator to figure out your odds? You're really putting thought into it. What do you think, Joe?
So while carry Mike's... the five.
Is there a seven in there?
Is there a seven? Where did this -2 come from? God damn, I really want to say Gary Oldman.
For Darkest Hour?
For Darkest Hour. Like, there's some fantastic... I guess the only one I don't really know about is Timothy Chalamet. I don't really know that name from
Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah, I don't really know the name from anywhere else. And we all know how much of a Gary Oldman fan I am because he... can just really get into characters. The problem is that Daniel Day-Lewis is known to be able to do that as well.
Yeah, he only does a movie every 5-6 years, so...
Yeah. Denzel Washington's awesome, but he's not really a character actor. But Daniel Kaluuya was he in any other movies? I don't think so.
It was his first real lead role.
Yeah, like big role.
But he knocks it out of the park.
Oh, yeah. He's tremendous in it.
I was trying to also see if Gary Oldman had won Oscars before.
He has.
So I want to say Daniel Kaluuya.
The reason he hasn't won a lot is because people forget who he is in those movies. Because last time you see him, you're like, that's not Gary Oldman.
Man. But I would say Gary Oldman would get it, and if not, I would hope Daniel
Day-Lewis.
No.
Daniel Kaluuya.
Kaluuya would.
See, that's the weird thing. Three out of the two have Oscars.
Yeah,
that's crazy, because it's probably gonna be one of those three. Mm-hmm. Just like I don't know, I feel like the popularity and like the name value of those three will sway the votes.
Yes,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, which is sad because,
like
I said, Daniel Kaluuya really nailed it.
So I'm again, I just feel like every time Daniel Day-Lewis makes a movie, he's gonna get an Oscar. And then the fact that people think this is going to be his last movie
may sway it that way.
I think so, man.
Look, give him on his way out.
Yeah.
This is I was looking up this Call Me By Your Name, the kid that's in this, that Timothy Chalamet. He's 22 years old. He was born in 1995.
This is his...
easily his first. Easily yeah.
his first like, movie as well.
No, not his first movie. He's been in a bunch of things, but this is by far his biggest of the movies.
Has he been in anything that we know?
Oddly enough, he's also in Lady Bird.
Interesting. That's
the other movie that's on here for me being nominated for other things too. Nothing we've really ever, nothing that you've seen. I'm almost guaranteed.
That's yeah.
But yeah, I mean it's strange. I mean he's only been acting since really well. He had two short films in 2008, but he started acting full in movies in 2014. He did a bunch of TV shows. He did an episode of Law and Order. So there you go. He was in 4 episodes of Royal Pains. He was in 8 episodes of Homeland. He's done a couple stage things. But yeah, I mean, otherwise, I mean, he really obviously fresh face, 22 years old. So, I mean, amazing if he won a fucking Oscar ahead of these, of Daniel Day-Lewis, Gary Oldman, Denzel Washington. Like, that's a pretty good stepping stone to making anything you want at that point. You know what I mean? Like, you should probably just at that point be like, I'm out. I can't do better than this. I literally won over 3 of the best actors ever to make movies in the history of movies, in the history of men. I'm out. Like,
see, if he was an athlete and he did some crazy shit like that, he'd just retire and go right into commentating.
Yep.
So, yeah, if I was him, yeah, because he did some good stuff. If he was to just win in this class, it's like, yeah, bro, you're never.
He's as he does his acceptance speech, he lays his gloves on the stage, buck him out.
Yeah, like what would you do at that
also
point?
Gives
anything you wanted at that point.
Yeah, man, just fuck. Do like a cooking travel show on with Anthony Bourdain because you're just not gonna be fucking acting.
He literally used to do Flags of the World. All he does is go around and look at flags from all the different countries.
Look at
and
all
nations.
These flags.
Look at all these flags.
Where are all them flags at?
This flag is square. This one's almost round. This is like a pennant. Yeah, so obviously he's a young kid, so that's incredible for him. But yeah, it's pretty insane. Next up, performance by an actress in a leading role. You have Sally Hawkins for The Shape of Water, Frances McDormand for The Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, Margot Robbie for I, Tonya.
Good for her.
Right?
I'm excited about that one.
You have... I don't remember how to say this girl's name.
Me, I don't know at all.
It's...
A chick from Lady Bird.
Yeah, chick from Lady... Something Ronin, right?
Cerise?
Is it Cerise? Ronin? Cerise. Might be. Cerise Ronin from Lady Bird and Meryl Streep from The Post.
All right.
Obviously stacked with ladies in this category.
Again, when Meryl Streep gets nominated, I feel like she wins. Kind of like a Daniel Day-Lewis thing. So I feel like she's got to be the favorite. But I think just listening to how people are talking, Frances McDormand is probably like...
Yeah. Everyone's saying it's like the most incredible
thing ever.
Yeah.
I really would like Sally Hawkins to win, though.
It'd be amazing if she won because the fact that she has no actual lines, so all her acting is literally done with emoting.
Yeah,
and the fact that it's a tough gig to have.
Yeah, because you have no dialogue
to learn sign language first off. That's have to learn an all new language that's really difficult, really if you think about it. But also just the frustration you have to not frustration in learning. I mean, what I'm saying is frustration in your acting. You have to. You have to convince people.
She had to communicate her feelings non-verbally. She had to communicate her frustrations about non-verbally being able to communicate.
Yeah,
It's a very, and she did such an amazing job, and she was fantastic.
And I truly believe she was masturbating in that bathtub.
Yeah, right.
To an egg timer.
To an egg timer.
Well,
An egg timer.
Yeah,
if an egg timer went off, she's like, "Gotta finish." I get the eggs.
I get the eggs.
But it would also be cool to see Margot Robbie win for a movie that was not your traditional.
Almost a throwaway movie for most people, really.
So, but I would probably put my money on Frances McDormand winning. Just from, again, I haven't seen that movie, but just from what I've heard. That's a big, if if Margot Robbie or Sally Hawkins beats Frances McDormand or Meryl Streep, like,
yeah,
that's another one of those. Fucking drop the mic, dude. You're done. Mm-hmm. Just make funny haha movies for the rest of your life because you fucking killed it. You know,
give up for just like, yo, I can do whatever I want. I'm gonna make a movie, making a puzzle.
Make sci-fi movies for the rest of your life because you know they're not gonna get nominated exactly, for anything, right? So you don't have that pressure anymore.
Yep, you can literally put out the world's best performance of any movie in a sci-fi movie. You'll never get nominated, so you don't have that pressure of like, am I gonna win for it?
Oh, but make it a movie about dragons or some bullshit and get nominated. Fucks.
Yeah, for best costume
hat.
They wouldn't even win.
No, they'd be nominated though. Nice to be, you know, thought of.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Best performance by an actor in a supporting role. You have William Dafoe for The Florida Project, Woody Harrelson for Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, Richard Jenkins, The Shape of Water, Christopher Plummer, All the Money in the World, and Sam Rockwell for The Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. The interesting thing about this category... Besides, there's two actors from the same movie in it for a supporting role, is Christopher Plummer. That's the role
reshoots
he took after they wanted to remove Kevin Spacey from it.
Yeah.
So his acting, I mean, granted, Christopher Plummer's an amazing actor, always has been, but like he stepped into a role and reshot all those scenes, and that he gets a nomination. That's kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's,
you know, he must have been really good in it. Because, I mean...
Or are they just trying to make people forget that Kevin Spacey was a thing in Hollywood?
Just racing them all together?
Mm-hmm.
It's just crazy to think about, though, like, you know...
That's a weird one, because here's the thing. You ever, like... There's been times where people, like, look at the best supporting or best actress ones. There's a couple people that I don't know. Best actor, there's a couple people that I never knew before that. One I don't know, and one I never knew before the one movie they got nominated for. This category, William Dafoe, Woody Harrelson, Richard Jenkins, Christopher Plummer, Sam Rockwell, are all really good actors.
You can think of movies, several movies you know them from.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like, that's it's not stacked in terms of, like, this person always wins. It's stacked in, like, these are some really good fucking actors.
Really tough choices. Of these movies, I have seen one of them.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to say, but knowing these actors, obviously there's a reason they've been nominated for it. But it's like knowing these actors, like, well, that's a tough decision because like when Woody Harrelson's on point, he is on fucking point. Like amazing on point. William Dafoe, it's hard to think of a movie he's not amazing in. No matter what kind of character he's playing.
And he plays guy who has sex such with a tree, weird variety.
Or a guy wearing a goblin mask, you know what I mean? Sam Rockwell always needs to be nominated for everything he does because that dude just throws everything into
and
it.
And Richard Jenkins kind of like the dark horse here. But dude's been
acting
making
forever.
A career of nailing supporting roles. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like you've never seen a movie, and you might not think, damn, Richard Jenkins killed it, but you're never going to see a movie with Richard Jenkins and be like, nah, that part could have been done better.
Yeah, exactly. You know? He's always good no matter what. And then Christopher Plummer, I mean...
is a kind of old school Hollywood legend.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's hard to say. But yeah, it was a tough one for me. I would like to see Sam Rockwell have it, but I really think Richard Jenkins needs it because he was amazing in The Shape of Water. He's a neighbor, by the way.
I think it's going to be
okay,
Christopher Plummer.
Christopher Plummer?
Yeah, I just feel like the weird circumstances surrounding it and the fact that he had no prep time and he went in and nailed it, apparently.
That's the thing, too, is like, I wonder how, like...
What's the last one he won for?
Like, it's the thing is, like, that, like, what Mike said is, like, the short prep time and, like, doing that, but, like, also getting thrown into a movie where, like, not only are you reshooting scenes... that only someone might have been, but with other people, so they're reshooting those scenes too. And the way you do a character versus the way someone else does a character might be completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So do you go in and have to do what was done before?
No. In fact, I watched a little bit about this.
You can tell from the trailers that he played it completely differently.
I never saw a trailer before.
Oh yeah.
I never watched one before with him, other than the one he was in, and he was in it for like a short amount of time.
Right. No, they because it's what's his name that directed it?
Ridley Scott.
Ridley Scott. And that question was asked of him. Did Christopher Plummer coming in take a look at anything that was already done by Kevin Spacey and base any of his acting off of that? And Ridley Scott said, no, absolutely not.
Yeah, I think
he wanted to come in. Scott and Christopher Plummer wanted to come into it with just a clean slate and not want to transfer any of Kevin Spacey's performance over to this character. Yeah. So it's completely different than Spacey's.
I would hope so. I mean, it'd be weird if they wanted, like, hey, we need to do what Kevin Spacey did.
Can but you
like,
be Kevin Spacey, but not Kevin Spacey?
Don't do what Kevin Spacey did.
In real life, but like in the movie, it's fine.
Yeah. Michael, what do you find it on Christopher Plummer?
I'm just going back to his early stuff, and it's crazy to think how long this dude's been in it.
The dude's like, what? 94 years old?
Some shit like that.
All right, up next. Performance by an actress in a supporting role.
Sorry, he was in The Sound of Music. Like, I think that's what his first nomination came from, right?
I think so, yeah.
65 to now. How many, years is that?
65 to 2018. So 53 years. Right, you said? Yep, 53 years. Yeah, no, it's crazy to think about that dude's been acting for so long.
Well, you can have nominations spanning that long.
Yeah, I mean, he's a really good actor, so.
Yeah, you've been really good for a long time. That's crazy.
You've been doing well, sir. There's a reason you're still acting. Apparently, it's not because you're cheap. It's because you're good at stuff. Best performance by an actress in a supporting role. Mary J. Blige for Mudbound. Which, at first I didn't know what it was, but that's that Netflix movie.
I don't know it either.
I almost had to look it up, and I was like, wait a minute, that's the Netflix one. You have Allison Janney for I, Tonya, Leslie Manville for Phantom Thread, Laurie Metcalf for Lady Bird, and Octavia Spencer for The Shape of Water. Shape of Water, just every category. I have seen one of these. Octavia Spencer was good in it.
She was.
Like, I think the biggest thing that stands out to me is the interaction with her husband, that scene with her husband. I think it was, like, what would stand out to me for her performance-wise.
Well, that was her range in it, you know?
The other times, she's really good because she plays that scared, like, she plays scared really well.
Her scenes with Michael Shannon, though, were...
on point.
All of them, because it went from being like, this guy's weird and annoying, like when he's in the bathroom,
straight out scary.
Scared, yeah. She
did a really good job. Range. But what I'm saying is, if you really want to see what I think probably was the biggest part, is that scene with her husband and Michael Shannon, obviously, because that scene was fucking nuts. So I mean, I would say her, but I mean,
and she wins Oscars too.
She won for the Space Math Lady one, right?
Yeah, and she got nominated for The Help?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So
she's like, she's one of the, again, becoming one of those, like, you put her in a role, she's going to fucking get nominated.
She's good at what she does.
Yeah. I'm hoping for Octavia Spencer. But I'm full honesty, I haven't seen the other ones.
Yeah.
So I'm not real sure.
I'm not going to say I'm surprised to see Mary J. Blige on there, but I am surprised to see Mary J. Blige on there because A, I didn't know she was in Mudbound.
I didn't know she acted.
She's been in a few things.
Yeah, I know.
But it's like, oh, okay. All right. It'd be pretty cool to see her win, but I would.
Grammy Awards.
Ha ha ha.
Ooh, if she wins, though, she. Be really close to EGOTing. She'd get the hard ones.
Yeah, the Tony would be the only one I think she'd have to really
just write a fucking play.
Or be in one.
Be in a play?
Yeah.
She could be in a play. She could win an Oscar. She could be in a play.
Yeah. Well, more EGOTs. If she wins an Oscar, yes, she can definitely be in a play. But like, yo, tinkle, tinkle, tinkle. Like, I got this thing.
Do they make noise? I need to get my EGOT on.
Do they make noise? I was going to
make there's a little bell in it.
Okay, good. Oh. Man, I was about to say. I was like, I
don't know. Oh, okay, good.
Maybe the screw's loose at the bottom or something. I don't know. Are they screwed in? How's that work? Someone win an Oscar in this room, and we will find out. Or someone send us one. If you have an extra one, Brad Pitt, just go ahead and send us one in. Does Brad Pitt have any?
No.
Probably not. I think he's been nominated, though.
I'm sure he has.
Next up, best writing for adapted screenplay.
Adapted screenplay.
It's funny because when you look at these two ones, it's like original screenplay, adapted screenplay. So you have Call Me By Your Name. You have The Disaster Artist, Logan, which actually threw me off when I saw it. I was like, oh, that's weird for writing.
It's weird that it got adapted, though, too. Like, yeah. I know why, but it's like, I think that could be original. Like,
yeah, like, that like, should be, like, original screenwriting.
But I do like the fact that I got nominated for
anything, yeah. For something for outside.
Adapted, though. Yeah. Because now two of my favorites can win. We'll get into that when we get into the original screenplay.
Okay. You have Molly's Game, Jesus. Which is another interesting choice, too. And then you have Mudbound, which is right there. I was like, oh, it made another one that was a surprising one for me. Because you think, again, this list, like these two lists, should be a lot of what you see up top.
Mm-hmm.
In the best actor and the best director stuff, because obviously you can be a really good director, but if you don't have a really good script, you're not going to do much with it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I was like, but to see this one, but then when you look at the original, we'll get to that in a minute, you'll see why. But so adapted screenplay, I have seen one of these. It's Logan. You've seen two of these?
Disaster Artist.
Oh, that's right. You went and saw it without us. Thanks
for the invite. I invited you.
Yeah, 7 minutes before the movie started. Mm. Hey, by the way, we're seeing this movie.
A couple hours before.
I'm pretty sure that's not how I remember it.
Yep.
All I know is I saw it 7 minutes before the movie started.
See? Majority rules. Winners. Mike's a fucking prick.
Winner, chicken.
PUBG? Anyways, if you ask me, Logan. It would be amazing to see Logan win.
That's what needs to win. Logan needs to win.
Because, like, come on now. What do you think?
It's like Joseph? The anti-superhero Logan. Superhero movie.
Logan, he says. All right, next up, best writing for original screenplay.
This one should be a no-brainer.
Get Out.
That's in the list?
The list is The Big Sick. You have Get Out, Lady Bird, The Shape of Water, and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
I got three here. I've seen The Big Sick.
Yep.
I've seen Get Out. Yep. And I've seen The Shape of Water.
Yep, I've seen those three as well.
The Big Sick was amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it got nominated. But I almost feel like it's weird that it's an original screenplay since it's based off a true story.
Yeah.
Like, when I get it, there's never been a book written and it's not adapted off the book. But I feel like that's odd because it's not...
It's not an adapted screenplay. You're not adapting it from another written form.
But it's just weird that it was like a... And I understand it still has to be written because you can't just shoot a documentary about what had happened. But
you can't.
That just seems weird to me. Yeah. The Shape of Water obviously was fantastic, but I feel like The Shape of Water is more of an homage to filmmaking in general.
I was going to say sexism in the 50s.
Yeah. But like... Because it kind of breached and it's like it took bits and pieces from so many genres and so many classic films that, again, fantastic, should be nominated. But Get Out has to be like the best. It's the overall, best written
because you're going for that more original.
Yeah, man. Like this was the most original movie I've seen in
many a year.
Like I can't. Yeah, like in a long, long time.
Not just original, but original on the scale of major motion pictures.
Yeah.
Because there's obviously a lot of original movies that come out.
That like, just can't like, get swept you know, away and don't...
You know, like Justin and Aaron's movies are very original.
Right.
But they're not big A-lister names yet. Like a Jordan Peele who's... Like, was in the spotlight for many a seasons on his own TV show with his buddy.
For a sketch comedy show.
And to then come out and... Literally just drop off the face of the map, come back... Do what we all expected, a comedy from him, right? With Keanu.
Yeah.
But then, out of the blue, this thing. And when I first read about it, I was like, oh, okay, it's going to be a really fun movie, right? And then you see it, and you're like, no, there's not anything what I expected.
Slight comedy elements to it.
From one person.
One person.
That's it.
But God damn it, that movie's so good. Yeah. It's such a good story, and it's original shit. Like, it's like the fact that he could deal with racism...
in the way
and
he did.
Make it original somehow.
Yeah,
like is mind blowing. Like, but yeah, like if that's the big one, I'm okay if anything else that Get Out got nominated for doesn't win, because I'm not. It's the underdog of all underdogs in terms of these nominations. But if there's, in my opinion, one thing that it clearly stood out in, it's you the know, story. It's yeah. the original screenplay. So that's gotta win.
The writing of,
yeah. If that doesn't win, dude, like it's a horseshit category.
Horseshit category.
Horseshit category. Watch that one asshole say the wrong thing and not give it to him again.
Oh God,
The Big Sick by Jordan Peele. Is that right? The next category we're gonna skip. Best foreign language film.
Yeah, it skipped it.
Mainly because we have no way of choosing this. We can pick whatever movie we think from country we want.
I like this title.
This one sounds fun. The Square. I know what a square is, so I'm going to root for that one. Best animated feature film.
This has got a weird tie that I've actually seen.
This one had a lot more movies in it than I thought. But also, ones I've never heard of in my life. Okay. So you have The Boss Baby. Not one I've heard it, and I've actually watched it. It's actually extremely hilarious.
I love that movie.
It is really funny. Very heartwarming, and well, it's very sad at moments, too. You have The Breadwinner. Never heard of it in my life.
Mm-mm.
You have Coco, which is obviously definitely ahead of winning this category because it's Disney and Pixar. You have Ferdinand, which...
John Cena.
John fucking Cena movie. Like, if you ever said, hey, a John Cena movie is going to get nominated for an Oscar, I'd have been like, is it that one where he's a Marine that gets shot up behind a wall? Yeah. Is it that one? No?
No.
It's an animated where he plays a bull.
A friendly bull.
Okay. Friendly bull. You have... then you have Loving Vincent, another one I've never heard of. So, in this category, I would almost say the clear-cut winner is going to be Coco.
It's the... Pixar one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Pixar one wins. That's what they do.
So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I would say... Actually, wait, Coco is just a straight Disney one, though, right?
Is it?
No, it's a Pixar one. It's a Pixar one, too, yeah. I was trying to think, is did they have another one this year? They had the Cars movie, Cars 3, but I was trying to think, did Disney have another animated movie this year of their own, right? I don't think they did.
I don't know.
Because for a long time, there was always two. There was always were going against each other in Best Animated for a long time.
Yeah.
Because they would do, like, Frozen would come out, and you're like, oh, okay, you know. That's Frozen. It's going to win. Like, one for Best Song and shit.
Moana lost last year, didn't it?
Yes.
Like, that was madness to me.
Crazy madness. First off, amazing soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing original music. Mm-hmm. Mike loves it.
Mm-hmm.
He sings it on a daily basis to himself in the shower.
That's almost not a lie. I love that.
I have the tapes to prove it.
Why's your no weird?
Why did I put them on tape? I don't know. It just feels more nostalgic to watch you on tape.
He likes the warmer sound of it.
Yep, like vinyl.
Yeah,
the vinyl I put you in.
Oh, you like shitty quality? That's good.
Can I get a shoe off?
He's a vinyl.
But like, yeah, I mean, Coco winning is obviously good. But yeah, with Moana though, like original soundtrack. The visuals in that movie too, like unbelievable. Like, how could something like that win? But like original music would be ridiculous. So I would with this category, I'm going to say Coco.
Yeah,
because it just seems I don't know what The Breadwinner is or Loving Vincent, but like compared to Ferdinand and Boss Baby, Coco stands out drastically.
Coco pulls on the heartstrings on purpose.
Yeah, right from the trailer alone, like. Like, you know, I was like, oh, okay, well, that's rough. But anyways, yeah. Achievement in Production Design is another one of those weird ones where, like, the really strange movies get nominated for. Like, the weird things, not that you wouldn't think would, but this is where, like, movies who don't get any other nominations, including sci-fi movies, get lined up.
Go into these ones?
We will. Okay. Have you seen what's in the list?
Yeah, but...
You have Beauty and the Beast, Blade Runner 2049, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, and The Shape of Water. I will say this, Darkest Hour and Dunkirk probably shouldn't be on this list compared to these other movies.
Mm-mm.
And the reason why is Beauty and the Beast, Blade Runner 2049, and The Shape of Water, they're filmed, their movies are take place in places that don't exist in real life. So it's very easy to make Dunkirk. Why? Because Dunkirk's a place you can go.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, shooting there is obviously in a modern day is difficult because you have to redo the world in World War II. And the funny thing about that is Darkest Hour is actually about the same time frame.
It is, yeah.
It's really hilarious. But also a very easy thing to do. But like The Shape of Water, that night, that weirdish gothic 1950s world doesn't exist anywhere anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're in Portland, Oregon. Blade Runner 2049 doesn't exist at all. And has, as Joe now knows, gorgeous everything in it. I mean, it looks from the wastelands of Vegas to LA itself, you have this crazy change. And with that wall that protects them from the weather, mm-hmm. air quotes, because it's not protect the city from weather, just protects them from the giant waves of water.
Yeah.
To just like the interiors of the buildings is unbelievable because that shit isn't real. None of that is real. Even the farm in the beginning of the movie, like, none of that is, like, the shack they go into, it's just not real. You can't make that.
Yeah.
Like, you have to make it, you know what I mean? You can't just, hey, let's go film in this house. You have to build that. Because it's in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then Beauty and the Beast, you recreated a cartoon with real things.
Yeah.
You can't, again, you didn't go, hey, here's an island in Scotland, let's go film on it and just make up shit around it. No, none of it is real. None of it was shot in real life. It was all set on stages. And it's like, at one point, like when she's riding up to the castle at one point, I'm like, did they actually just draw this last time? Like, this castle looks really good when we draw it in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And this time, they're like, we're going to shoot out the real castle this time. Like, no, it doesn't exist. It's so, I don't know. It's weird to me that those two are in this. That's why I wanted to talk about this, because those Darkest Hour and Dunkirk just don't seem like production design to me is a obviously a very broad stroke of a idea.
Well, it especially looking at this list, it falls into that whole like costume design where you have like some fantastic movies that are like costume design is just amazing and it literally is just come right out of the imagination of the designer.
Yep.
But a lot of times what happens
always when
when that's something that has been done before, you were just pulling historical
which
records.
Which we'll get into, but Phantom Thread is doing that.
So,
oh, yeah, of course.
This one's difficult fashion. Because as much as The Shape of Water looks more gothic and is more has a higher production design, I would say, than Darkest Hour in Dunkirk, it still isn't as difficult as the other two, as Beauty and the Beast and Blade Runner. So it really falls, to me, it falls between those two.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
But I would love to see Blade Runner win because of...
what it is?
What it was. Plus, it's fresher in my mind. It was such an amazing thing just to look at.
Does the CG factor at all for you for that decision?
Like, yeah, a little bit.
Do you knock it a little bit? Because in my head, I feel like The Shape of Water, everything was
real,
built and real, and it was...
I mean, the backgrounds
but there's
real.
A lot of stuff that went into Blade Runner that looks like it was actually built.
I get that. I'm just wondering, to get your point on it. But
of these movies, I'll say this, though. I have yet to see Darkest Hour, but as a production design, I would say... the biggest struggle any of these would have would be Dunkirk in a way, because Dunkirk, and I haven't been to Dunkirk ever, but I'm gonna guess in a modern world.
I say lately,
Did
you go
vacation to war torn areas? I could see a reason that would be a really big production hurdle is because it is in the real world still, and you have to make it look like it did back then. You know, without any modern things, and the buildings have to be back, and you have to get rid of cars and blah, blah, blah. But you have a real place to go and do that. But also, if you were to do that on a soundstage, you could reproduce something that already exists in real life and put it there. But those other ones, like Joe is saying, Beauty and the Beast, Blade Runner 2049, that shit doesn't exist anywhere but in someone's crazy ass head.
Yeah.
Shape of Water, in a way it does, but as to Mike's point earlier, it's an homage to things that do exist. So you could say, hey, this is what an old front of a movie theater used to look like. I want this.
Right.
So you're pulling from real life.
And I see that. I'm just saying that, yep, that it, well, it is more creative than those two. It's just not as creative.
Yes, exactly. As
the,
yeah, other
ones. What about the fact that, again, and I think Blade Runner should win on this one.
Yeah.
But does the fact that it's based off of the production designs from a previous movie, because it's very similar to that, and it's obviously updated because it's in the future, does that affect anything at all?
No. To that point, I actually think it in favor, actually, for that, because they took something that existed so long ago, and they didn't episode 1, 2, and 3 it. They didn't make it so outlandishly that much better, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because they could have easily gone way farther than they did, but what they did do is they took that dark, dingy world.
It's definitely the same world.
Yep.
And it makes sense.
We just get to see more of it because they have the ability to make the scenes bigger, and so we can see more of it versus the very narrow being on a set. Obviously, they had to create all that stuff for the original, mm-hmm, and the big wide shots in the original ones were all miniatures and shit like that. But this has those beautiful, like, when he's flying over the city in the car, in the spinner, and it's from the top, like, the camera's looking down on the car, and I was like, this is fucking amazing. Like,
yeah,
looks so, and we didn't see it in 3D, but I can imagine that was gorgeous in 3D, because that car is so in focus, but you see all the big craziness underneath, and, like, just, and the fact that entire movie, like, majority of the movie is shot in crazy weather.
Either. That's what makes me so sad about the decline of 3D is this movie right here. And it's one of the reasons why I love my fucking TV so much. You know, in this movie, there were only maybe three scenes that I can think of that I experienced the ghosting in. And most, they weren't in foreground shots. They were back. It was stuff that was a blurry in the background. But it was so gorgeous. This movie in 3D, so gorgeous.
Yeah, for sure.
That I just couldn't stop. Like, there were points in times that I would, and another reason why it goes to production design, there were points in times where I had to stop myself from just sitting there thinking this is just an amazing looking movie, and actually focus on what was going on, because it would just be sitting there going, oh my God, this you know, the colors are amazing, and you know, the backgrounds are awesome, and everything going on, it just looks so good. Oh shit, no wait, stuff is actually happening. I need to
pay attention to what's actually going on. Bringing to our next category, which has to go along with that, achievement in cinematography, you have Blade Runner 2049, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Mudbound, and The Shape of Water.
Blade Runner, hands down.
I will go with Joe's on this, because the cinematography in that is nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Because of all the shit that is going on, and the fact that, unlike Mudbound, Dunkirk, Darkest Hour, and Shape of Water, is a lot of shit you're shooting with isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is CG, and it is fake. It's not something you can control. So your cinematography has to live up to the lighting that some asshole CG guy is doing somewhere. And they both have to match up really well, but also just like the shit that your actors have to, you know, you line up a shot for your actors to act in to stuff that's not there either.
Yeah.
You know, plus all that shooting in rain must have been a fucking nightmare.
It must have been. And that leads to another, like, just absolutely amazing shot again in 3D is there. What's his name is talking to the police chief, and they do a pullout shot where it's looking through like this rain-soaked window.
Yeah, and just sheeting down.
As it's sheeting down, and in 3D, that looked absolutely amazing. I'm sure.
Yeah. So I mean, I would say in that one it would be Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah,
I would say. And the other ones, they did a tremendous job. I mean, of the ones I've seen, I haven't seen Mudbound or Darkest Hour, but the other ones, I mean. Cinematography in Dunkirk had been pretty crazy to do, too, because there's some pretty ridiculous shots in that of, like, the beach and the planes and the boats and all that shit like that. But nothing, like, I can imagine shooting in all that fucking rain all the time. Like that, in the waves, that scene in the waves.
Yeah.
Where like I literally, like, spoiler, I literally thought Harrison Ford was going to die in. I was like, this is where he dies, right?
Right.
This is where he died in real life. Yeah, this is where he dies.
They're going to come out now that the movie's been out for a while and they'll be like, hey, Harrison Ford actually died.
We filmed the ending already where he goes and meets his daughter way ahead of time.
Yeah.
This scene was our last one because it's most complicated. And you always want to leave that for last because that way you can drag it on if need be. We lost him. We're sorry. We don't actually know where he's at. We assume he's dead because we can't find the body.
Yeah.
And they're dealing with real water. It's not one of those things like CG the water. No. These are real waves smashing against a fake car and people. And I was like, this seems overly dangerous. Like when they brought Star-Lord and what's-her-face into space to shoot that movie they did together with him, Passengers.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, that's pretty expensive to shoot two stars into space along. Well, Michael Shannon. Not Michael Shannon. What's his name? Bartender. The one that freaked out. Not Michael Shannon. His last name's Shannon. You know what I'm talking about. Like, those three people have to go up into space. And you're like, that's pretty expensive to do. But all right, whatever. We'll do it. It's dangerous. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Water's bad news. By the way, I was joking. I don't believe they shot those people into space to shoot a movie.
No, you said it on a podcast.
Damn it.
Yep, it's on the internet. It will be on the internet.
I have control of that, sir. Oh, this episode didn't work. If you're hearing this, that was a joke as well, because you're hearing it.
Did it? Did it.
Best achievement in costume design. This is where Joe's going to throw a fit.
Yeah, but it's
oh, actually, oh, never mind. You're going to throw a fit. All these actually not too bad. Yeah. Oh, yeah, there we go. Yeah, you can't. This one's not going to be a tough. Well, the winner is going to be Phantom Thread, most likely. But Beauty and the Beast has real stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, you go through the list and then I'll get to it.
So you have Beauty and the Beast, you have Darkest Hour, Phantom Thread, The Shape of Water, and Victoria and Abdul.
The only thing here is how much, like The Shape of Water, were the prosthetics that what's his name, used for the actual mer creature were real, right?
Yes, he was wearing it. Well,
I mean, the eyes were technically fake, but yeah. That would be
a costume. Yes.
So
but that's here, I think that's actually makeup design.
Is that makeup design? That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. where in
the costume for him would be like the collar that he has to wear and like that shit and like his pants.
So I'd definitely go up into makeup. Or people's pants, makeup and hairstyle is literally the next one. Yeah. And guess what's not on there?
I don't film editing them on mine.
It's makeup and hairstyling is the next, oh, is the weird. Next on mine.
Weird.
Shape of Water is not on that one. So if you include that type of prosthetics and stuff like that into costume design, which I kind of do, because it is a full body thing, I would say that it should be The Shape of Water if you're just going off of like clothing and whatnot. I would say Beauty and the Beast. Because while it is more traditional clothing, it is still something that doesn't necessarily exist. It hasn't existed, like, you know, Darkest Hours, military fatigues and stuff like that. Phantom Thread looked like a period piece. So again,
1950s London. But the thing what Mike was saying about that whole thing is that's actually that movie is about the fashion industry.
But and I get that.
So like they obviously had to recreate.
I get that.
That, but like, but to yes, me, I understand.
To me, it still falls within the.
It exists in the real world.
It used to exist in the real world.
It wasn't like, drawn by somebody.
Yeah, this isn't.
And animated into a cartoon and brought to real life.
With exactly. That being said, Phantom Thread will win that.
Yeah, category. For sure.
But if The Shape of Water doesn't win, I would say Beauty and the Beast.
All right. Achievement in film editing. This
is a no brainer.
This one should be a no brainer. And I know what Mike's talking about, and we'll go through the list. You have Baby Driver, Dunkirk, I, Tonya, The Shape of Water, and the Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri. I have yet to see the Three Billboards. I've yet to see I, Tonya. But if Baby Driver doesn't win this for film editing, someone's insane.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say.
Because
we're all on the same page on that one.
Yeah, there's they no
fucking
reason.
Choreographed a movie to a soundtrack. Like, yeah. Fuck you. That wins.
Yeah.
And they did it great.
Yes.
You know, it's not like they did it poorly. And it's not even,
like, the fact that, like, oh, yeah, you have to edit that together, but you have to edit that together with a song you can't cut up. And then there are some scenes where you have to edit the movie around a song, how it is cut for the movie. So that's insane. Mm-hmm. If they don't win for that, and this shit's rigged.
that category runs into the sound editing one too, which I think also Baby Driver should win.
Yes, I agree with that. Which is on my list, not the next one. My next list is Best Documentary Feature, which we'll go ahead and skip over. We'll go to Achievement in Makeup and Hairstyling. This is what gets me. So you have Darkest Hour, Victoria and Abdul, and you have Wonder.
Just skip it. I don't know him. Yeah.
I was like, okay. Achievement in Music. This is original score. So you have Dunkirk, Phantom Thread, Shape of Water, Star Wars The Last Jedi, and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Star Wars, John Williams, he's amazing every time. I'm not going to say he's going to win, but it's amazing.
But it's you know what I mean? Similar work than what he's been doing. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like, it's not like he recreated all new stuff for it. It's very similar to what you had before.
Same. I guess if you can make Star Wars music a genre, you know what I mean? Like, point, it's just making it a little bit more in that genre. So I don't know.
Dunkirk had an amazing original score. Shape of Waters, I can't think if I remember it.
I can't.
Other than atmospheric music.
They played a lot of classical stuff in the background. So,
but the atmospheric music is what I was talking about. Like,
But I feel like in a movie like that, where the real classical, like tap dance and musical stuff that was constantly playing in the background, and the music that was constantly playing that was real, like outside of the dream dance sequence, which was all original score stuff, like that part was amazing and beautiful and sounded amazing, but I don't feel like there was enough original score to like warrant a W in that category.
I would say Dunkirk. I haven't heard Phantom Threads, but it's Dunkirk.
Probably going to win, too.
Yeah, most likely.
Phantom Threads is going to get so
But many. Hans Zimmer's original score for Dunkirk is just that swelling of the music, with like even the playing scene was just like, oh, so intense. Mm-hmm. Adds to it so much for me. Achievement in Music, original song. I have yet to hear
any of these.
Yeah, any of those.
So skip.
So I can't.
But Mary J. Blige got nominated again.
It's true. So number two.
My money's on her.
There you go. She makes real music. Hair sound mixing. So best achievement or achievement in sound mixing. I would have to give this to one of two movies on this list. It's either going to be Baby Driver, which should be, or Blade Runner 2049. Because sound mixing, the reason why this is difficult choice for me, and the reason I think Blade Runner...
We actually went into this before on the podcast. I can't remember for what, but you're about to make the same argument.
And I was going to say for these ones, maybe give an explanation of what the difference between sound mixing and mixing and editing
is. Yes, so sound mixing is making it so you can hear everything going on and where it needs to be. Sound editing is literally making so the sound matches what you see on the screen and what's supposed to be matching on around the environment when you do like surround sound. So sound mixing is taking things like rushing water or rain and making it so you can hear that and the people talking.
Or sirens in the background.
Or sirens in the background so you know shit's happening.
Yeah.
So it's a very atmospheric thing. It's a very environmental thing. Where sound editing is making it so it's all coherent together, which can be very difficult when you have a movie like Baby Driver because, well...
Yeah, so...
There's a lot you have to kind of edit to make it work properly because the music is part of the movie.
Yeah, mixing should be Blade Runner. Sound editing should be Baby Driver.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
Speaking of sirens, that's actually our sound mixer. Next up, Achievement in Visual Effects. This one has some people we haven't heard from yet. You have Blade Runner 2049. You have Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. You have Kong Skull Island. You have Star Wars The Last Jedi. And you have War for the Planet of the Apes. This is a tough one. I've seen all of but one of these, which hurts my soul to say. Because I should have seen it already, but I have not.
Yeah, you should have. I would have thought you would have seen it already.
I have not bought it, and I did not see it in theaters, which is, we're talking about War for the Planet of the Apes. But this one's tough for me because the two that stand out the most would be Blade Runner 2049 and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, because a lot of what they're playing with we haven't seen before. In a way, with Blade Runner we haven't, because it looks better, but you know, whatever. Guardians is literally nothing but soundstage and fake shit around you, and it looks real, so that's really good. Star Wars Last Jedi, we have seen a lot of it before. It looks gorgeous. The ships look amazing. The space fights look amazing. Fucking, you know, light swords look amazing. You know, that sort of stuff. We've seen it before. You know, it's good. They're right on point. They didn't lack in what they've done before. Mm-hmm. They look just as good as they ever have. But Blade Runner 2049 has essentially three different environments you have to go to. You have the rain and the water. You have the desert, and you have that weird snowy environment inside the holographic building thing that she makes the memories for. Those three things are very hard to make look real.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say visual effects, that one would probably stand out more to me. But also Guardians, though, dang. You know what I mean?
Yeah. This is one of those categories that's just like, if whoever wins, like, it, you know, good for them. I mean, there's no bad movie on this list to me. I haven't seen it is War for the Planet of the Apes, but for me, a few of them edge out other ones, just because I'd be looking more for a good balance between practical and visual effects, like something that's way too graphics, you know, heavy. Guardians kind of tends to be too graphics heavy.
Yeah, but that's what this category is, though. Is your visual effects, like,
yeah, but it, visual effect could is also practical.
No, I get that.
But that's what I'm saying is that when you have live action people and they're just on a soundstage and everything else is pretty much in the background, what I'm saying is you also have like Blade Runner where you have more practical effects with like the car, and then graphical effects, which are the background scenery, and those are amazing. They work together better. Yes. That's what I'm saying.
They blend very well.
There are
seamlessly.
Certain ones that are just so Blade Runner edges a little bit higher up. I'm sure War for the Planet of the Apes edges up, you know, higher because you have those more real environments mixed with the CG
monkeys.
Elements and whatnot in it.
I
don't know how much Kong Skull Island was real.
Kong
versus
Skull Island is the only one where I feel comfortable saying it's not going to win.
Yeah. Kong looked amazing. The fiery creature things looked amazing. But you can shoot in real environments and be fine. The background is background. These are just, I mean, the moving shit around real people and making it look real when, you know, like the helicopters are crashing and there's a giant monkey throwing shit around. Not really shit. He didn't throw his own shit. He just threw shit around, like euphemism shit. But to like Guardians, though, to Joe's point, is it's on sound stages, so you have to make every environment that they deal with, especially the Sovereign inner people and stuff, like the whole gold everything.
Yeah.
And like them getting little pods and stuff and like the curved screen, and like that's visual effects. And it's like crazy to think about how hard that is, the transition of like how, like, I don't know what it looked like filming it versus what it looked like in real life, you know what I mean? But like everything I saw in Guardians, I was like, did they shoot this in space? Did they, like, Disney just go, hey, use the you know, this is the corporate shuttle. Just go ahead and go.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars isn't going to use it. They're going to shoot just in one spot, so you're fine. But, like, it's crazy to think, like, none of that's real for the most part, because they never went anywhere real other than Dairy Queen. So it's like, I don't know. It's hard. It's a hard one to choose. I still think it should be Blade Runner 2049 because they took a really seamless real stuff and fake stuff and made it look like it was all one piece.
And I would say Blade Runner as well.
Mike, what do you got? This is the last category. The rest of this is garbage.
I'm guessing it's going to be War of the Planet of the Apes, though.
You think so? Because of the monkeys?
Yeah.
Because you have like a whole set of cast that's just fake?
Yeah. And it, how like they have to interact with live people
directly,
they have to,
and horses,
and they have to, you know, show emotion, and I think all those factors of humanizing the apes, for lack of a better term.
You seen it?
Huh?
Have you seen it?
No.
Or how good it is.
I'm just going off of what I think they'd be looking at. You know what I mean? But I feel like that's probably...
Obviously got nominated, so it looked good. It's not like they just gave it to... It's like, oh, we need another one. Here it is. Because that's how Kong Skull Island got in there. They're like, yeah, it's got a lot of visual effects. Might as well throw it in there. Because nothing else we have does, you know what I mean? But that's it for our Oscar nomination show.
Well, there is one more that... Where is it? Animated short. I just want to bring this up because Kobe Bryant is nominated.
He is for Dear Basketball.
Animated short, which is very weird to think that Kobe Bryant got nominated for an Oscar this year.
It is. It's going to lose to Lou, though.
Is it? Dear Basketball is actually good, though. Like, that's a weird thing.
Lou is phenomenal. I haven't seen Lou.
I'm not saying who's going to win or not win. I just thought it was worth mentioning that Kobe Bryant is now a Oscar
nominated
nominee.
Something.
So that's kind
of. And cool. It wasn't about a basketball documentary?
It was kind of.
Well, like, not about it. That wasn't a basketball documentary.
Yeah.
It's about basketball, obviously.
It's a love letter to basketball, basically.
Dear Basketball. And it's just basically 12 pages about how he likes blankets.
Yeah.
Where's the basketball part? It's like, no, I
well, play we'll get basketball. There. We'll get there.
That's in
I'm
part
a basketball
two.
Player. It's implied.
Yeah. Duh. I love blankets. Yeah, so that's it for that one, everybody.
Yeah, everybody.
Ha, ha, ha. Yeah, so, you know, March 4th, well, whatever Fridays after that, we'll be talking about, you know, what went down.
The dubs.
The winners. And if we agree or disagree, which we may because we may have seen some of them.
I'm going to see all of them.
Mike will see all of them. Thanks for the invite, buddy.
As long as iTunes comes through for me, hooks it up.
Murphy Brown revival? It just popped up on here.
That's weird.
Well, that's strange. Sorry, I got distracted.
Yeah, you did.
Shiny things. Yeah, so I'm going to call. That's it for this week's episode of Comes Naturally. We are
Joe,
Mike.
I am Cody, and as usual, you fuckers just came naturally.
Ow, my headphones.